You're listening to Mind Labs, an open platform for artists on Sheffield Live. For more information, visit www.mindlabs.co.uk.
It had been a while. You'd spent the time travelling the world as I'd occupied myself with mundanity. Since your return, it would be a lie to say we hadn't made the effort to meet up once or twice. But we'd conceded to the need for a proper catch-up. A weekend of quality time together was in order. We set off to gather supplies, alcohol, takeaway and nibbles, breaking the journey with a quick pint at my local, The Rising Sun. On finishing our drinks and takeaway in hand, we headed back to the flat, where I'd somehow managed to impressively crush that bachelor cliché by having a nearly clean and tidy flat. Imagine my mother's pride. I then outdo myself by producing two large, clean wine glasses. Unfortunately, this illusion, haphazardly created earlier, comes crashing down once the surface is scratched. It didn't take long for it to be noted that the takeaway was probably the best option, due to the lack of any fruit, veg, in fact, the distinct lack of anything edible existing in the flat at all. Imagine my mother's shame. The takeaway was in fact the perfect option, far better than anything my meagre cooking skills could muster together. Sitting together, we tucked in, our eating distracted only by our conversation, and our conversation distracted only by our eating. Eventually, not a scrap was left. As we settled down for the night, we almost had everything we needed. Great company, fine bottle of red, comfy sofa, and nibbles for good measure. All that seemed to be lacking was a great movie. Quite a surprise, as I'd be expected to have this side of things covered. You see, I can always spot a good movie. But I don't just settle for the best of the best. I pride myself on being able to make a bespoke choice, the best movie suited for individual tastes and specific occasions. This refined skill that draws on both my great passion for and formidable understanding of movies, gained over many years of endless trips to my local arthouse cinema, watching whatever was on, just so I could experience the joys of that definitive cinema-going experience. So, why had my movie-picking skills failed me? Over time, I've fallen truly and totally in love with films. However, alongside this healthy relationship, separate feelings have slowly emerged. Ones that drift towards the realms of obsession, and beyond that further, into the depths of complete geekhood. These conflicting feelings lead to uncomfortable consequences as their obsessive geek side prevails, clearly demonstrated by my own DVD collection. Considering my love of films, I mostly, if not exclusively, end up purchasing films for the purpose of physically owning them. Occasionally, I get one for the purpose of watching it. Only sometimes, on these seldom rare occasions, when the true love of movies wins through, will I go for a film for the sheer pleasure and enjoyment of the film itself. Now, imagine the contents of my DVD collection. Dull, isn't it? Not only depressingly dull to the non-initiated in film geekhood, but beyond comprehension, and more importantly, just beyond entertaining. Fortunately, from the depths of my collection, we found a few glimmers of hope. And as we try to overcome our sometimes contrasting tastes in movies, we quickly move away from the films that we individually enjoy without even suggesting them. For a while, we skirt around choosing movies suited to each other's tastes rather than our own, believing joy will be gained from the other's happiness. Then we try and solve the problem by instilling so much trust in each other, we reach a point of collective indifference. We eventually resolve the problem by a meeting of minds and choosing a film we both know we'll enjoy watching together. We settle down for the night, with wine, minstrels, and a perfect Friday night movie. We end up chatting into the early hours of the morning. It was a pleasant drive through the Peak District the next day. Approaching the outskirts of Bakewell, we came across the country bookshop that you just wouldn't let pass by. It didn't disappoint. Seemingly sharing your love and passion for books, like all the best bookshops, it went beyond that simple definition of a shop where books are sold. Its character and persona defined, not by shelves with books on, but by the books on the shelves, deceptively portraying the feel of an old-worldy second-hand bookshop. Drawing you in with an open invite, then allowing you to willingly lose yourself in every nook and cranny of the endless labyrinth, gently embracing you for what seems like an eternity. But what really makes this a great bookshop was its love for books, shone through a love of your love for books, acknowledged purely through its own existence. With the obligatory coffee and green tea drunk, large portions of locally made cake shared, we headed onwards. We completed our short trip to Bakewell. As a market town, its shops are as vast in number as in variety. We did, I'm glad to say, have a couple of shopping highlights. The first was a venture back into one of those classic childhood experiences, the memories of which thankfully hadn't been distorted when viewed again through those older, larger, adult eyes. It was still as new, as bright, as colourful, as exciting, as sweet an experience as it ever was. We ventured again into the wonderful childhood world of pick and mix, trying our hardest not to barge past any children on the way. With sweet bag and shovel in hand, we made our way meticulously down the line, slowly feeling the weight of the bag increase as it filled with a multitude of colours, textures and sounds, nameless sweets of endless shapes and sizes, as rationality gave way to temptation and desires. What a joyful experience. £4 for, in essence, a bag of sugar tells its own tale. This, however, was just a prelude to the main event of our shopping adventures. There was no doubt where we would end up spending the majority of our morning. You knew it, I knew it. We were destined to end up wandering through the surreal world of charity shops. Charity shops exist as a paradox among a nation of hoarders, with spare rooms, attics, garages and sheds overflowing with long forgotten possessions that hold no real use or value, sentimental or otherwise. What remains is left without pride and unloved, tied up in bags on the steps of charity shops across the land. There, homeless objects, unable even to hold the attention of an everyday hoarder, end up on the shop shelves, haphazardly displayed with little effort to emphasise whatever value remains, and seemingly unable to shake off that worthlessness and rejection that the objects hold. Among the mass of discarded objects lies the occasional redeeming item, the majority of which are tucked away, stacked on the shelves in some badly lit corner of these shops. It was these undiscovered gems hidden among the bookcases that we were drawn to. The bookshelves of charity shops are equal to, if not better, than any shelf in a second-hand shop. Why this is remains a mystery to me. Bookworms motivated by their love of books are in a different league when it comes to their hoarding. As a bookworm, the love of book transcends the presence of the book in our world and our presence in the world the book creates. The weight of the book in your hands, the curvature of the slightly broken spine as the book opens, pages fanning out knowingly to that half unread page, allowing you to enter once again into the book, following the threads of the story as they wind their way towards the edges of the page and beyond. You become aware of the feel of the texture of the book, page after page, compelling onwards as you're captivated within the narrative, as it draws to a close and you are parted from the world, the weight of its presence still remained. Filled with grief and sadness on leaving these worlds behind, the books find a home on your overflowing bookshelves, serving as a reminder of memories shared and providing comfort in the knowledge that one day you may return again to the world the storyteller creates. These much-loved collections of stories fight for space amongst the collections of must-read books, kept with a mixture of hope, expectation and anticipation, providing comfort in the knowledge that one day they will feed that relentless desire to read. As the shelves buckle under the weight of these ever-growing collections, something has to give. Within these collections, there are the occasional books where, as the cover slowly fades, that seemingly unbreakable bond between reader and book also fades. It's these books that we find on our shelves in the charity shops. The ones that give way for newer, better, much-loved books. It was amongst these endless, meandering bookshelves that we searched for these undiscovered gems, and I was in the company of a master. Your skill of being able to pick up a book, and within moments, with a great sense of accuracy and confidence, get a taste of the book, the nature of its contents, what palette it best serves, and its value, both monetary and sentimental. As you search through the hodgepodge collection, it was by embracing the distinctive sense of quirky randomness, or in fact, letting it embrace you, that allowed you to draw out the quality. The quirkiness didn't distract from the quality, in fact, it enhanced it. As sometimes it would offer you a new tale, told in a new voice, shone through a new light, set to a new beat, composed to a new rhythm. It was a joy to behold, as we sought out and picked up one or two treasures between us. Let's just say we bought a lot of books. Lunchtime had arrived. Ignoring the many varied options that we had come across, we instead followed some advice from Phil, the porter from work. He had pointed us in the vague direction of the river, suggesting we should try out some fish and chips. It seemed we had been sent on the quest to find the fish and chip shop, guided only by directions pertaining to that mythological, singular great British chippy. This chippy, of which we all know there are many that rightfully claim the place as being the one, is held dear to the hearts of its champions, who recall the taste, the smell, the warmth and texture of that simple combination of fish, batter and chips with great fondness. So we headed towards the river and followed the trail of blue fish and chip boxes right up to the door. We had nothing to regret. On the bench by the river, we tucked in to our large, enjoyable portions of fish and chips. There was enough to go around, so we partook in another great British tradition of duck feeding. Offering at first a small amount of batter to a couple of venturing ducks, it was examined at length. One of them prodded and poked it, a little, but was unappreciative. We then offered them a little bit of fish, which was immediately rejected out of beak. A little too close to home, maybe. Finally, we got round to offering a chip, but the uninterested ducks, insulted by our poor attempt at feeding, had waddled off to one of their other many better options available, leaving us with a cluttered path of debris from our unsuccessful feeding session. A stroll was in order. With our books that were literally weighing us down, now in the car, we set off into the warm summer afternoon on what could only be described as a long, short walk, picked from the local guidebook. Supposedly, it was a 4.5 mile circular walk, starting along the River Wye towards Haddon Hall, up the hill and back down towards Bakewell. It should have taken at most 1.5 hours. It didn't. It took much, much longer. This was a little down to our leisurely pace, a lot down to the map lacking detail, with directions with added vagueness, but it was mostly down to our sense of adventure being a substitute for our much needed but lacking sense of direction. So off we went, down along the river, crossing bridges and back over again, on lanes and along tracks, over low stiles and up bridleways, confidently up trees and tentatively down again, maybe half left, whatever way that is, and definitely half right. Barns to go above, pass by, walk parallel to, up hills, via the little hill, and further up, but still, what a view. Gates to climb over, stiles to walk around and squeezes to find, just lefts and just rights, maybe even just straight on, but not a soul in sight. Through all manner of holes in walls of varying shapes and sizes, some even there by design. Skirting around disused quarries, via this plantation to that plantation, and across meadows as far as the eye could see. Signs that may be there, or maybe where they should have been, walking parallel to left, then crossing to the right, towards and over, away from and through, down and around, up and across, passing by and doubling back. Then, we sit. Together, waiting. For a while, perched on top of the hill as time tumbles past. Contemplating unheld hands by the blossom tree. There we sit and wait. Then we double back again and again, avoiding or maybe not through the woods if only we could, crossing back across the road, homeward bound, along the never-ending path that closes in and in and in and in, and opening into a lazy evening game of cricket on a lush green playing field. The end in sight. Although we're never really lost, we really never found our way. Following that well-worn path travelled many times before, always knowing where it was going, but never knowing where it led. By the end of the day, we once again went our separate ways. But a few weeks later, it had been a while.